walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on. I say walk on, I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home.
The Poticon Center for Contemplative Walking is breaking new trails in the exploration of walking as a contemplative activity. Our Walk On podcasts introduce the people who are leading this exploration and the people who are doing contemplative walking themselves. Welcome to another Walk On podcast. This is a two-parter where we interview Dr. Frances Garrett at the University of Toronto, Department of Religion. She has taken a group of her students from the Department of Religion to walk the hills and mountain slopes of Sikkim to experience a mix of Buddhist monastic life, local environmental activism, and the lives of the people who live on top of the world. In this first episode, Dr. Garrett describes the projects of 2016 and 2017, where she and her environmental studies co-leader took small groups of students into the monasteries and landscape of Sikkim, a tiny sliver of a Himalayan nation tucked between China, India, and Bhutan.
I'm gonna keep on walking till I find my way back home.
I am an associate professor of Buddhist studies in the Department for the Study of Religion here at the University of Toronto, and I've been here since 2003. My specialty within Buddhist studies is Tibetan Buddhism, and I teach courses of all kinds on Buddhist studies, Tibetan history, or Tibetan language. So I've done some field courses taking students to India, and in the fall I'm teaching a course for first-year students that's actually not a Buddhist studies course, it's a small course for incoming students to the university, and I'm doing that on the cultures and histories of walking.
So I understand from our mutual acquaintance, John Negri, that you did this very interesting trip up into Sikkim earlier this year. So why don't you just talk a little bit about how that came about, what you were trying to accomplish with that, and what was the adventure like?
It's a course that we've done twice now. So this year in May, we took four students, a co-instructor and I took four students to Sikkim, which is in the Himalayan regions of India, and we were there for about a month. And before the trip, the students had spent about 2 months doing some preparatory work. So they did a research paper before they left, before we all left in May, and then we spent all of May traveling around Sikkim. So my focus was on Buddhist studies and Buddhist landscapes. So we visited some monasteries. We stayed in one Buddhist monastery for a number of days and visited a number of other monasteries. And then we also went to some sacred lakes and caves and stones and so forth. And my co-instructor is an environmental historian. And so he helped us think about land right issues with indigenous peoples in Sikkim and controversies over rivers and mountains that are also sacred spaces for Buddhists and other religious groups in the region, but then are controversial as the sites of dams or other conservation efforts.
So the students were from both of those disciplines too? Or?
The students were mostly religious studies students. We had one person from the Commerce School who had taken a couple of Buddhism courses, okay. And so she came along, and one first-year student who's yet undeclared.
Okay. And how did you present the opportunity? Was it as a kind of spiritual experience? Was it a policy or a historical kind of thing?
The course was called Himalayan Borderlands. So it was a course in a fourth year level course in the Department for the Study of Religion. And so it was advertised, as I described, to help students think about both Buddhist studies on the ground and issues of sacred space and sacred landscape, and then also environmental history issues in northern India. So it's a sort of cultural, religious studies / cultural studies / history course.
So pretty multidisciplinary.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Good. So why don't you describe a little bit about how did you prepare for this? terms of learning, your trip preparations, and the kinds of expectations and questions that you think people had going into this?
Well, we had done a similar trip last year.
Okay.
So that in that case, we had 8 students. It was not a course last year, so the students had no homework, but they came with us. We did a 3-week trip to many of the same places as we went this year.
Okay.
And so that was, I have spent a lot of years in India. So for me, traveling in India is not so hard.
Okay.
And I haven't been in Sikkim very much, but I've spent a lot of time in West Bengal and other parts of India. And so I was quite comfortable with that. I hadn't led a student group before, so that was a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I have taken my children there, so
okay.
I was used to taking care of people
sure.
while abroad. And so my co-instructor, though, Matt Price, had never been to India.
Okay.
So last year was his first experience. But then this year, having done it the first time, it was much easier. Of course, we'd been to most of the places we returned to the second time. Preparations were smoother, and we also knew better how to prepare the students for what they were going to experience.
Okay.
It's, for most of them, a lot of culture shock. And then also there's the issue of being in class
mm-hmm.
around the clock.
Yeah.
So that's hard for us as instructors. It's also hard for the students to feel like they're, you know, in a class that lasts 3 weeks and goes, you know, 24 hours a day. So
I'm curious how your hosts responded to you.
Really great experiences this year, especially. We stayed in a monastery outside
mm-hmm.
of Gangtok in Sikkim for a number of days, and they were exceptionally generous. We were able to sit with the monks in the meditation hall and
okay.
attend all the rituals that they did. We had a full access to all the rooms in the monastery, the kitchen and so forth,
wow.
to really see how it worked. We attended some classes. We watched the monks debate, and we saw what they did, you know, first thing in the morning and last thing at night. And we went to some English classes and helped some of the children monks
okay.
learn English. So that was really exceptional. Then we went to a homestay in North Sikkim in quite a remote area,
mm-hmm.
and we're hosted in the home of an indigenous Lepcha person who was one of the leaders of a very influential dam protest movement that happened a number of years ago, about which there have been a number of articles written, and my students had all read these articles.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went to stay in this person's house, and he was also very generous, taking us around to show us the site of the proposed dams, which they had managed to block, and explaining to us the impact of damming this holy river on their local community and practices, and showing us some of his conservation projects. He had been the leader of a restoration project of a monastery, a Buddhist monastery in his village.
Mm-hmm.
And he also does organic farming projects in traditional ways. So he took us to his farm and we did some farming with
okay.
him. So that was another amazing experience, very great for the students.
How much of those political, kind of social change activities, how integrated is that into the life and efforts of the monastery?
Monastery, I think the damming issue has been pretty controversial in Sikkim.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of proposed dams, a lot of actual dams, but then even more that are proposed. And all of that water that comes down from the mountains in Tibet or in the higher Himalayas, a lot of it comes through Sikkim and then goes down to India. So it's India wants the power that can be produced by the rivers in
mm-hmm.
Sikkim. But those rivers are holy rivers for the indigenous people, but also for the Buddhists and people who are, you know, more recently settled in Sikkim. And so actually the monasteries have been working with some of the indigenous communities to protest
mm-hmm.
some of the damming projects.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we think of monasteries as being kind of removed from society, but actually they're really well integrated in a lot of these kind of social movements into the interests and the needs of the indigenous local communities.
I'm struck by what you're talking about with relation to the land, the landscape, and the spirituality that the rivers, the mountains are
yeah.
considered like spiritual beings.
Yes.
How much did that, within the Buddhist context, in the monastery life, how evident was that?
Yeah, I guess it comes out in sort of meeting and talking to the monks who are themselves from
mm-hmm.
these different regions, and their home villages are in these indigenous places. So the monks, it's a Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist order. It's a Kagyu monastery that we stayed
okay.
most of the time in. But the monks are not Tibetans from Tibet. They're Lepcha people or other indigenous people from Sikkim who come from villages in different places around the state, and for whom those local rituals that propitiate the rivers or the lakes or the mountain are really important aspects of their life. So the monastery, it's not as if they go to the monastery and they forget their local rituals and the importance of their local sites. They continue to practice those kinds of things also. And the monastery itself, of course, does larger scale rituals that are land oriented, that you know, protect the site of the monastery from evil forces, or that can defend another sort of site. You know, monks can go to a person's home and do rituals that defend that land from invading forces, say.
You've been listening to another Walk On podcast presented by the Podokan Center for Contemplative Walking. Check out our growing library of videos and podcasts, enjoy our Tumblr photo essays, and visit our Facebook page. All those links can be found on our website at podokan.com. If you have a walking story to share, let us know. We'd love to hear about your experience. I'm Enan Ray Parcello. Thanks for listening, and walk on.